This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I think we should start every morning with an image of Earth from space pasted on the mirror that we look at, just to remind us about where in the greater scheme of things we are, and how much of a miracle it is that we exist. This little blue speck, the miracle of the ocean that makes everything else that we care about possible. It's where 97% of Earth's water is. If you think the ocean doesn't matter to you, I've had people say, if it dried up tomorrow, what difference would it make to me? Well, if you like to breathe, or if you like to be alive, first of all, because life exists because the ocean exists, because water is here. And not just rocks and water either. It's 4.5 billion years of fine-tuning, mostly since the arrival of life, mostly especially since the arrival of photosynthesis, and then all the great, amazing parade of life that has happened over the hundreds of millions of years that have led finally to our existence. But it's only taking us a few decades, a few centuries at the most, to unravel some of the basic systems that we rely on to do important things like breathe, because most of the oxygen in the atmosphere actually is generated by those little photosynthetic organisms in the sea, as well as, of course, the photosynthetic organisms, trees, grass, moss, and all that on the land. But the ocean really is where the action truly is in terms of driving the way Earth functions. If you think, even if you haven't touched the ocean touches you with every drop of rain that falls, with every breath. We just need to remember that.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. You just heard Dr. Sylvia Earle, oceanographer, explorer, author, and lecturer, who is also the founder of the US-based NGO Mission Blue, which pushes for protection of marine parks and places that are vital to the health of the ocean. In conjunction with World Oceans Day, which was celebrated last Wednesday, the 8th of June, I spoke to Brett Garling, the communications manager at Mission Blue, about the work that the organization does. And we also discussed how the ocean is linked to all our lives and the urgent need to save what we have before it's too late. So, Brett, Mission Blue is an initiative of the Sylvia Earle Alliance. So, first of all, could you just tell me a bit more about Sylvia?
Sylvia, or Dr. Earle, is one of the most amazing people I've ever had the pleasure to work with or to meet. She really is an icon in marine conservation and marine biology world. She's had an incredible career, sort of blazing the trail of our understanding of the ocean, and also for women in science. She's just made an incredible impact. Seeing the circles that she broke into when she was getting into her line of work, and the amount of barriers that were put up for her, and then now seeing how she really is at the top of her game, and one of the most respected marine biologists and ocean conservation voices in the world. It's just really amazing to see what she's gone through and how humble and present she is in all the work that she does all around the world as she travels and advocates for marine protected areas and for more sensible ocean conservation policies around the world.
She's been doing this for decades. I mean, almost all of her life practically, right?
She has.
Yeah, and she's still going strong, I understand. She's just like constantly busy going for like talks and everything. She's just always in demand.
Dr. Earle is always in demand, and she is constantly traveling, and she's constantly diving under the water. She's remarkable.
And I understand that Mission Blue was established as a result of Dr. Earle's 2009 TED Prize wish. Could you elaborate on that?
Of course. Dr. Earle made a very big splash back in 2009 when she was given a wish from TED to make a wish for the world, and she delivered a TED talk that I highly recommend to anyone who wants to get a handle on ocean conservation. Mm-hmm. She made a wish to ignite public support across the world for marine protected areas, and as a means to regenerating the ocean. as a palpable way that we can, you know, become hopeful that there actually is a way to reverse all these declines in the ecosystems in the ocean, mm-hmm. and that's through marine protected areas. And so Mission Blue is a 501c3 nonprofit that was brought online in California and now has partners all over the world. And Mission Blue's mission is the same as Dr. Earle's TED wish, which is to ignite public support around the world for marine protected areas.
And she calls these hope spots, if I'm not wrong.
You are not wrong. Yes, they are called hope spots.
What are these designated areas exactly? How do you decide where these areas are?
So these areas have been designated by Dr. Earle mm-hmm. and a team of scientists and advisors, many of which come from the International Union for Conservation of Nature, the IUCN. Mm-hmm. And these experts selected these places in the ocean because they really have the potential to be the storehouse of biodiversity and of ecosystem services that can help the ocean regenerate back to health if these areas are protected. Some of them are already protected, such as the Cabo Pulmo Marine Reserve in the Gulf of California. There's some protection around the Sargasso Sea. There's MPAs in the Coral Triangle. However, protection is sort of a blanket term that can mean a lot of different things, and it's truly complicated, sort of what level of protection an area is receiving. Mm-hmm. And even when an area receives, say it receives full protection, such as Cocos Island down in Costa Rica, which is a no-take zone, that doesn't mean that there won't be fishing there unless there's an appropriate amount of enforcement.
Exactly.
So hope spots are really it is an inspirational construct to galvanize global support for marine protected areas. And so while they're chosen by scientists for the benefits that they provide, whether it's, you know, migratory species that pass through, or it's an especially, you know, vibrant area of the ocean, like the Great Barrier Reef. Mm-hmm. They're a rallying point for everyone who has a love for the ocean and who understands how much that humanity benefits and really relies upon the ocean for our existence. Mm-hmm. Gives people places in the ocean where they can point their energy and talk to their friends or their people at their institution, their university, policymakers. So artists can create art that has, as artists have done in incredible ways, that, you know, try to get people to think more about these areas.
Right.
That's the whole idea behind them, that they can really inspire hope. And the ocean is so large, and it can give people a little bit of a place to grab onto and advocate for a healthier tomorrow.
And I mean, just going back to what you said about how, you know, we are so linked to the ocean, but I think that many people are largely very unaware, you know, of how our lives actually depend on the health of the ocean. So, you know, in your line of work, how do you best describe, let's say when you're doing advocacy work, how would you best describe our link to the oceans?
Dr. Earle does a fantastic job describing, you know, the humanity's link to the ocean. And we try to echo the same lessons in our communication through Mission Blue.
Yep.
But, you know, one of the largest ones is definitely the oxygen cycle. And the photosynthesis that is performed by very small animals that live on the surface of the ocean. Some sources will say that more than half of the breathable oxygen on the planet comes from that. Some might say slightly less, but we're talking about without those ecosystem services, there would not be enough breathable air on the Earth. The ocean also is really a storehouse of biological diversity. Biodiversity in the ocean greatly outstrips the biodiversity on land. And so if we think of life and of the abundance of variation in the genetic code being something that's essential for our continued evolution and for the stability of various species, the ocean's incredibly important in that respect.
Yeah, I think Dr. Earle puts it, no blue, no green.
No blue, no green. Yeah. That's right. She has a knack for boiling things down into extremely concise and
yes.
affable and funny and ironic, but yet very piercing terms.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I was going to also, you know, call attention to the fact that There's a great amount of humanity that depends on fish for sustenance. And while people will sort of span the gamut, you know, there's those that are gung-ho fishermen, and there are those like Dr. Earle that believe that we should pretty much stop eating fish. She's chosen to stop eating fish. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she would advocate for that. But, you know, also, you know, if you look at the full picture, there is also people who subsist on protein from the ocean. And at the current pace at which population levels are being depleted and being sort of bulldozed out of the ocean with industrial fishing and commercial fishing, those sources are certainly not guaranteed for the future.
And, you know, something that a mistake that we make, we don't like, okay, so when the forests are cut, it has a great impact for us, but we don't really care when, for example, the coral reefs are being destroyed. So do you think, you know, humanity is going to have to begin, you know, looking at creatures in the sea, more like wild creatures on the land too, you know, like the polar bears, the tigers, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more that there's a disconnect, you know, between the way that, you know, we react to, you know, a picture of a polar bear or, you know, a lion, and then the creatures in the sea. In fact, very often the creatures in the sea are referred to as seafood instead of what they are, which is marine wildlife.
We don't call them polar food.
we don't call them polar food. Exactly. So there is a great deal of work, and that's a lot of what Mission Blue is trying to do, is, you know, take people that might be nowhere even near the ocean and get them underwater and get them thinking about these creatures like the vibrant, intelligent creatures they are. And that's a lot of the work that we're trying to do.
I was reading one article about Dr. Earle, and she was actually looking at a school of fish, and she's like, she was telling somebody, the person interviewing her, you shouldn't look at them as a school, because then you think there's just so many of them. You need to look at them individually as one fish and just kind of connect to them in that sort of way, just to kind of understand that, yeah, there are so many of them, but each of them matter.
That's
in
right.
That sense. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that's a surprise that a lot of first-time divers have, is that the species, you know, it's not just the species, you're dealing with individual members of the species, and they have different personalities. I mean, you know, one sea lion might be, you know, shy and stay away from you. The other sea lion might be friendly and tugging on your flipper. Some fish will, you know, head for the hills when you get near, and then of the same species, that fish might follow you around, kind of curious about what's going on. And especially when you talk with divers who have been exploring the same area for many, many, many years, I mean, they literally know the octopus under the rock.
And I understand that's one of Mission Blue's priorities as well, to kind of gain more access to the deep ocean.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, part of getting people to connect more with the ocean, understand, give it some color so that people can care about it more, is underwater exploration and deep ocean exploration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ever since, you know, '60s, when we went to the bottom of the Mariana Trench, and even more recently when James Cameron went back down there on his solo descent, there's just been incredible leaps and bounds of progress in the amount of technology that enables us to get into the deep. The technology is really, really there, but the investment is not being made to get us down there. And as a result, you have, you know, less than 5% of the ocean having ever been seen by science, you know, in the first person. And you have to wonder, you know, with all the life and great, you know, discoveries that have been made in the ocean we've seen, you know, how much remains unseen. And that sort of magnifies the tragedy that there's places that have literally never been seen that are literally being bulldozed by trawlers, and we'll never know what was even there.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, the challenge, of course, is to save what we have before it's too late.
Absolutely.
Coming up, Brett and I discuss why one of Mission Blue's priorities is to gain more access to the deep ocean. You are listening to Earth Matters and the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Humans are altering the nature of nature. How do we take ourselves forward? Our first priority has to be, you have to take care of the planet that keeps all of us alive. I mean, somehow, that has to be numero uno. Got to keep the planet safe, not just for our kids, but for us.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters and the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. You are listening to our World Oceans Day special, where I had the pleasure of speaking to Brett Garling, the communications manager of the US-based NGO Mission Blue, which is part of the Sylvia Earle Alliance. In this second half, Brett and I discuss more of the work that Mission Blue carries out in the hope of increasing the size of protected marine habitat of the world's oceans.
So I know you want to go to deep ocean, not just for exploration, but for conservation as well. So what sort of activities or what sort of work are you doing to kind of move that forward?
Well, we have done several submarine dives on on our expeditions. We took it's called the Deep Sea Hunter out when we were last down in Cocos Island. We brought some people down there that were not necessarily marine scientists, but were influential and interested in the deep ocean. And so that's one way we're getting communities of people to become interested is getting, you know, influencers to become interested. And then additionally, you know, we're also, you know, very much excited to release, you know, pictures and video that we take when we're down there. Mm-hmm. We're actually very excited to be working with Alusha Productions, which is a fantastic operation. They have complete cutting edge underwater submersibles. You know, they are equipped with the latest in digital cinematography. I mean, they're shooting on red camera and 8K resolution underwater, just getting fantastic, you know, images and video. You should really check out Alusha Productions. It's just fantastic stuff. And I think the role that we can help do is, you know, we're not a gigantic foundation. So unfortunately, it's not, you know, we can't purchase a submarine and go explore the oceans. We work with our partners to do so.
Yeah.
And we also are just great supporters of the technology that's being developed. There's just amazing technology that's being developed, even right here in the Bay Area. Yeah. There's amazing technology being developed.
And you know, in addition to that, I understand you're also trying to educate people about the hope spots that we spoke about using Google Earth.
Yes. You know, when Google Earth was unveiled, Dr. Earle said to the gentleman, John Hankey, who was in charge of the project and had this amazing you know, success in rolling out Google Earth. She said, you know, you've done a great job. The job's half done here. Where's the other part of the world? You know, where's the majority of the world?
unexplored ocean.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that then, you know, came along Google Ocean, the ocean layer on Google Earth. Mm-hmm. And so, one of the programs that Mission Blue has been extremely enthusiastic about and involved with for years is getting, content, sourced from partners around the world, who, you know, who have these, you know, underwater videos, in remote places, or, you know, fantastic footage from diving, of abundant marine life, or maybe something that's, you know, not as heartening, like, you know, evidence of coral bleaching, and getting all these people and organizations to try to centralize their information and their media on the Explore the Ocean layer in Google. And that's been a really rewarding project for Mission Blue and for our partners, because it's taking all this content that might be living on someone's webpage or living on someone's camera and never made it out into the sort of light of the day of the internet. And we're putting it in this position where even someone, you know, who is maybe, you know, a little bored at their desk on a Wednesday afternoon can say, you know, I would like to go see what the Sargasso Sea really looks like, and they can dive right in and start checking it out and learning about these amazing ecosystems and about the animals that live in them.
And I guess that would help, you know, kind of connect us to it and just understand exactly how important
exactly.
It is.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's really the goal.
You know, you mentioned earlier that you and your team, you help push for greater protection in areas. And some of them, I understand, have no protection. And then there's some areas with some protection, but no enforcement. Can you give me some examples of the areas, like your success stories, for example, the ones that Dr. Earle and your team managed to sort of advocate for to be protected?
There's no story of success that stems from Mission Blue solely.
Okay.
It's important to realize, and it would be fantastic if it were possible to establish protection from afar. But what it really takes is aggressive and sustained advocacy from the community that is around or in the same jurisdiction or somehow linked to the marine protected area. So we have been supportive of our partners who have really done the heavy lifting, and that's one thing that is really important to point out. Such as the community of Cabo Pulmo, who through years, decades of sustained effort, created a marine park that they've defended from development and now has a thriving ecotourism business.
That's wonderful.
Or the protection right here in California that's happened at the Gulf of the Farallones Hope Spot. And so, you know, in that sense, they're also, you know, we are able to help because when a marine protected area is made, there sometimes is not a whole lot of a watchful eye on it. That's another thing that Mission Blue is able to do is to keep these areas, the ones that we can make it to. I mean, they're all over the world, and you know, it's not like we can be everywhere at once. But for instance, actually, we were down in Cabo Pulmo in February of this year, and unfortunately, we came across a kind of grisly scene. It was shark fishermen who were landing sharks on the beach in a place called Los Frailes, and were finning the sharks on the beach. And it was heartbreaking. You know, there was many different species of shark there. Some of them threatened species, and it was terrible. But what was maybe the silver lining is that, you know, Mission Blue expeditions are very media savvy, and we were there with cameras, video cameras and photo cameras, and were able to document the scene. Mm-hmm. And were able to talk with not only the shark fishermen, but talk with the local director of the marine park, mm-hmm. Talk with Dr. Earl, talk with some of the local members of the community and the local dive shop, to sort of flesh out a story that wasn't as two-dimensional as, you know, here are some bad people, you know, finning sharks on the beach. But, you know, talk more about, you know, what it means to make a marine protected area, what it means to keep sustained community engagement, which also means finding ways for people in the community to support themselves who have traditionally supported themselves with things such as shark finning. So when we came back to the U.S., we were able to produce a mini documentary about that and release it through all of our online channels, which get up to 50 million impressions a month. And then what do you have? You have a situation where instead of us, you know, just seeing this on the beach and shaking our heads, you know, there's tens of thousands of people who are now aware that even though Cabo Pulmo is a marine reserve, the job isn't done. You know, there's an ongoing vigilance and an ongoing discussion that needs to be in place in order to keep these marine protected areas truly protected.
And something else I read about Dr. Earl, she says that part of your work at Mission Blue is to represent those who aren't currently on the table. So she calls them tomorrow's child, the future generations.
Absolutely. Yeah, they had really no seat at the table for tomorrow's child.
Yeah.
And Sylvia has just been a fantastic voice for the generations forth that will be asking pretty hard to answer questions when it comes to the potential destruction of a lot of the wonderful marine wildlife that today we still have the chance to save if we just ratchet back on the just torrent of pollution we're putting into the ocean and resources that we're sucking out of it.
And, you know, one of the things that I believe, I'm a new mother, and one of the things I believe is getting them young. Just do you do a lot of like advocacy work with children, for example? A lot of the conservationists that I speak to, a lot of them are doing programs, you know, with school children, with young children, just, yeah, to get them young. Is that something that Mission Blue is up to as well?
We don't have a formalized engagement program with the youth. However, a lot of Sylvia's speaking engagements involve congratulating and interacting with youth all around the world. So she's had a profound impact. On the foundation level, what's interesting is we are constantly getting emails and letters from classrooms and from youth that she's talked to around the world asking, how can I get involved? How can we learn more? So we definitely take that really seriously, that we can point them in the direction to, you know, information resources, you know, or new media or things that can help them learn more about the ocean. And then Mission Blue has a partnership network of over 165 organizations that we really call attention to in once again raising awareness about the importance of marine protected areas and about the work being done around them. And so these educational programs for youth are all over the world, a lot of them in the U.S. In fact, a couple of them in Colorado. It's kind of cool. They're not near the ocean, but there's some great programs being done out there. And we are constantly taking the good work they're doing and the stories of hope and of good youth engagement that come out of those programs and sort of trumpeting them out as some best practice and what there could be more of. And we've seen that by doing that, we're inspiring other engagement from around the world.
I guess in your line of work, you have to balance, you know, conveying, you know, the gravity of our current situation with hope.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
how do you do that?
Yeah, it is a tough chestnut to crack. But, you know, they're really, Dr. Earle says it best that, you know, this is a moment in time where because we know what we know, because of the advances of science, because we've burned these, you know, millions of metric tons of carbon to have the industrial revolution, the computing revolution, because we've done all this, there's been damage, but we also have an immense amount of knowledge. And we are finally able to see the negative impacts of what we're doing. And by seeing this, we can have the enlightened opportunity to act and to change our behavior. And that's really the hope, is that you know, there is more healthy coral in the sea. There are more sharks in the sea. You know, even though some populations like the bluefin tuna have been completely hammered down to levels that are 5% or less than what they were historically, there are still bluefin tuna in the sea. So if we approach it this way, there is hope. It's just going to require action, not tomorrow, but today.
So you're quite optimistic then about our ocean's future?
Well, you know, and in order to achieve the goal of inspiring support for ocean conservation, there has to be a sense of empowerment given to the people that, you know, that there is something that can be done. And there truly is. I mean, today on World Oceans Day, Mission Blue has a campaign advocating for a boycott of single-use plastics. And that's a very popular theme we've seen actually on World Oceans Day from a lot of our partners, and it's no mystery why. It's an enormous problem that's affecting ecosystems and animals in the ocean and on land all around the world. And so there's a simple way that, you know, through collective action, a truly profound difference can be made, and it wouldn't take more than today to make it.
Yeah, and you know, I was just reading an article actually just before I came in. Fish are starting to eat microplastics. They seem to favor it now, which means we are ingesting microplastics when we eat them as well.
Yeah, there's a lot, and we're just starting to understand the gravity of the problem. I mean, you know, it's only in recent memory that we've understood that plastic is forming, you know, massive gyres in the ocean.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, these problems are very real, and just like ocean acidification and just like sea temperature rise, you know, the proliferation of plastics, you know, science is just beginning to scratch the surface of understanding of what this could do to marine ecosystems. And, you know, it's certainly doesn't seem like it'll be a positive conclusion.
What do you think that, aside from the plastic, what do you think is something that immediately everyone can do now just to help restore the balance in the oceans again? Something small that each of us can kind of adopt.
I think refraining from eating seafood or moderating seafood intake is an incredibly powerful collective action that we can take. You know, living in a capitalistic, globalized world, it's the demand for seafood that keeps the seafood companies and the trawlers in business. And so if we can, you know, some people will say, you know, I don't want to stop eating seafood. You know, that's fine. Well, then, you know, maybe dial back. And it's like, well, I don't want to dial back. Well, even that's okay. You know, why don't you try to figure out some, you know, marine protein that doesn't have as negative of an impact. It's almost like, you know, people are learning, there's an awakening now about meat on land and about factory farming of chickens and cows, and people saying, you know, I really want to know where my food comes from, and I want to know that the animal, you know, lived a healthy enough life. And, you know, the equivalent thing, you know, in the ocean is really to understand what practices are leading to your seafood that ends up on your plate, and understanding, you know, what the levels of bycatch are. How many marine creatures that weren't marketable were killed to get this to your plate, and those bycatch, and destructive practices, those variables differ among different seafoods. So there's plenty of resources online to go and sort of learn a little bit about, well, what seafood can I eat that would impact the system less?
Yeah.
And then also, you know, it's definitely encourageable to dial back the amount of seafood that you eat, or try not eating seafood for a month and see how it feels. Maybe you don't need it after all.
Yeah. And, you know, just here in Malaysia, actually, just to go to what you were saying about the creatures that are killed in the process, we are killing many turtles because there's a demand for stingray. And so when we put out the nets for the stingray, all these poor little turtles get caught in it and they just end up being killed and thrown into the thrown back into the sea.
It's terrible.
It's absolutely terrible. Yeah, but
especially because the demand, well, help me understand, the demand for stingray, what's the final use of the animal?
Just for food. It's a luxury food. It's not even it's expensive. It's like a delicacy.
A delicacy. Yeah, and there's actually, you know, there's another sort of level that I think that we sort of need to wake up to, is there's certain luxury tastes that have sort of taken hold, you know, for shark fins or for rays. And this is almost a question of sort of humanity rejiggering its psychology a little bit to not value those things quite as much, or at least to begin by understanding the, as you're saying, with the sea turtles that are caught in the nets, just the terrible side effects, and maybe opening up the discussion of, you know, is this worth it?
Exactly. Are you guys then proponents of like aquaculture?
You know, I don't want to speak for the foundation.
Okay.
I think that I can give you my own take on it. And I think, yeah, from what I've seen, we don't disparage aquaculture at all. I think that there's actually a great hope in aquaculture. And I think that especially, you know, if we can learn how to feed fish with things that are not fish. Unfortunately, a lot of aquaculture is we're feeding fish with fish. And so if we can feed fish with, say, microbes, or we can feed fish with plant matter, and there's actually some encouraging practices that are coming out now that are moving in that direction, then there's some real promise. And, you know, you want to just kind of look at the whole system, and aquaculture is complicated. It's almost like you could look at the electric cars. You know, is it better to drive an electric car for the air quality? Sure. But then when you charge your electric car, well, what's the source that's creating the electricity that's going into your car when you charge it at night? Is it a coal plant? Well, then maybe not, or who knows? I think when you look at aquaculture, you have to look very holistically, and you have to consider where the food for the fish are coming. And then also you need to consider, when genetically modified, fish are being used.
Yeah.
Very often, or there's many cases in which it's been shown that these genetically modified sort of superfish can get out into the natural gene pools.
Exactly.
And then there becomes a question about that. So,
and then they start to decimate other, like, sort of native populations, right? Yeah.
Right. I mean, and so my sense is that aquaculture has great promise. It's not there yet, but it has great promise.
Yeah, and the other thing is to choose the right kind of fish to cultivate, because if you're going to put, you know, if you're going to put predator fish, and then you're going to feed them fish, it goes back to that whole. It's not quite sustainable, is it?
No.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, fingers crossed on that one. I think that they're really it's fantastic, all the work and science and experimentation that's going on around that, that's being done by people that are trying to find solutions to some very big problems.
Brett, thank you so much. Would you like to leave us with a final message this World Oceans Day?
Well, I would just say, on World Oceans Day, remember the words of Dr. Earle: there's no blue, there's no green, and we really are all connected to the ocean, no matter how far away we are from it, whether we can see it out our window or not. The ocean really is what creates life on this planet and what keeps the planet working in our favor. So anything we can do to help the ocean is something that we should definitely put our minds to.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you so much.
That was Brett Garling, the Communication Manager at Mission Blue. And for more information on Sylvia Earle and Mission Blue, you can visit mission-blue.org. You've been listening to Earth Matters and the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
It's not just about polar bears. It's in the end about us, about how we're influencing and disrupting climate, weather, about acidifying the ocean with excess carbon dioxide. Ha! Who could have imagined that humans would have such power? I didn't know that as a kid, and a lot of people still are staggered by the thought that puny human beings could alter the nature of nature. But it's happening. We have the evidence. We're not making this up. We have documentation, cause and effect relationships, parallel. You know, you draw the lines, you see the acidification, you see the destruction of fish, you take away the lobsters and fish for coral reefs, you warm the planet, you warm the ocean to levels that are not favorable to corals, and they die. They go into a state of what is known as coral bleaching. Sometimes they recover, often they do not. The consequences, about half the coral reefs around the world are already gone. In some places, like the Caribbean, more than 80% since I was a kid. A lot of people say, well, so what? I've never been to a coral reef. If they disappear like the ocean, why should I care? Well, it's up to you. It's up to all of us to try to draw those connections.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.